to the cliff in just a little bit. Also, if you have your copy of the Bible this morning, would you please make your way to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. If you don't have your copy, you can use one of the Bibles in the pew rack right in front of you, and that would be page 1134. I will join you there shortly. This is a fifth Sunday of the month, and usually those are kids' Sundays, but this one fell on the last day of the year, and this sermon did not fit well, as hard as I tried, did not fit well with kids' Sunday, so my wife graciously said, I'll just take the kids down and you do what needs to be done. So this is going to be more of a traditional style sermon. Also, you know, this is the last Sunday of the month, and so it's one of those Sundays when we talk about where we're going next. And before I get started, anybody notice? A few months ago, we made a huge change in the bulletin. Remember? They went from being this big to being this big. Did you notice that we made another huge change this week? Well, you're figuring it out. How about we talk about what it means to share our vision? Now, we're not recasting a vision. We know exactly what our vision is. This is kind of the little diagram that we put out there in the past on how we see ourselves. We are here to move people from the community to the crowd to the connected, and the connected to the committed. This comes in direct way to how Jesus saw the church. In Acts chapter 1, verse 8, he says, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes to you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." We stated this in Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 through 20. "Therefore, go and make disciples to all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always, even to the very end of the age." That's how Jesus saw the church. Go to the community, bring the community into a crowd, teach the crowd about Jesus, and connect them to Christ, and eventually teach them how to be committed in living this Christian life. Jesus states his mission statement very simple. "For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." And that is our mission statement. Now, we put it this way because it's a little easier for us to remember. But have you ever wondered what would this look like if it was in sentence form? You see, rolling around on your bulletin, whether you've known it for years and years and years, there is not only our vision statement, which is this, there's also a mission statement. And believe it or not, if you look at last week's bulletin and this week's bulletin, those statements are no longer the same. Now, we're not going to dive deep into this. We're going to talk about this the first four Sundays of next year. We're going to talk about this particular mission statement. But this is how we see that connect, that community, the community, the connect, the community, the crowd, the connected, and the committed. If I was to put it into a sentence form to read it to you. Our mission is to bring glory to God by meeting people where they are in life, share Jesus with them in a meaningful way, and encourage them to live in a growing relationship with Him. Whose vision is this? It was Jesus' vision. It was the early church's vision, and this is going to be how we are going to go back to the basics with our vision. But again, we're going to talk about this more in the coming month. This particular sermon is not necessarily about introducing this vision statement. This is more like a State of the Union address. You know what those are, right? That's where the president every year gets called before Congress, and he sits up there and he tells Congress how the world is working, and usually they televise it, and there's this big, long speech. Well, this isn't a big, long speech. Mine's much shorter than the State of the Union address. But this is just kind of talk about where we are in things. And I got a couple of analogies I want to use. One is obviously going to be the runner. We'll get to that in a little bit. But the other one is we're going to talk a little bit about dieting. Now, this sermon is not about weight loss. If that's what you took out of this sermon, then you're going to miss the point. However, when you begin to talk about weight loss, there are some things that you need to remember about weight loss and the fact that it all starts with one thing. It starts with the image in the mirror. Now, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12. No, I didn't give you the wrong verse. I'm going to get to 9 eventually. Just hold tight. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, 12 says, "For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now know in part that I shall know fully, even as I am fully known." Paul had this idea of the Corinthian church about looking in the mirror. Now, if you say, wait a minute, we've heard this verse here recently. You have. We got real cozy with this verse this past summer. Remember when we were wandering through the zoo and we put all the animals up on the wall? It was all based not on the animals, it was based, what did we have hung right here on the front of the pulpit? It was a mirror. It was about the idea of looking at our reflection in the mirror, because when you begin to look in the mirror, you begin to notice some things about yourself, and that was the entire purpose of that sermon, was to get us to look at the things that maybe we've got going on in our life that we need to examine. But I also made you a promise at the end of that sermon series that we would be back. I like to keep my promises, so we are back. And now I want you to just think, not think about just looking in the mirror. I want you to think about, what do you do with the reflection when you see it? See, because James tells us in James chapter 1, verses 23 and 24, anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in the mirror and after looking at himself goes away immediately and forgets what he looks like. Sometimes that would be nice to forget what I look like, but it doesn't happen all that often. But imagine how that would work. You look in the mirror and you see yourself, and in just a few moments after you see yourself, you walk away and you don't even remember what you look like. Unfortunately, I think that's what we do when it comes to our spiritual mirror, and that's what we do when it comes to our church mirror. So the idea behind this sermon today is to get a very bright picture of where we are spiritually, both individually and as a church, because the truth is, if you look in the mirror and don't like what you see, there are really only four ways that I can react to the image. Now, these four ways, there's only one right way to react. But remember, there are four. The first way that you can react is in a disastrous way. Now, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on how body image impacts the thought process. In the 2013, his book, right with me. Thank you, Gary, for bringing it back to me, by the way. If you want to read more about what disaster looks like, this little book was put out by Thomas Rainer. It's called The Autopsy of a Deceased Church. These are churches that just could not figure out what they were supposed to do with the image. And if you've gotten to this point, the truth is that you've lost hope. See, if you've gotten to the point where you're at this disaster mentality, you've looked in the mirror, you've looked at the image, and you see no way to fix the image in the mirror, yet you just can't accept what you see. You know, they did a study for people that struggle with weight issues in 2013, and this is what they found. 27% of females admitted to having thoughts of suicide based on weight. 13% of males. The number jumped for those under the age of 24. Females at 44% and males at 22%. They simply saw the image in the mirror and they just saw no way out. But yet they could not accept the image of the sun. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about disaster because I will tell you, honestly, I would not do this. I don't think we're to the point that we just have to accept what we see and just go on with our life just as it is, but we do have some other methods that sometimes we use. Sometimes we use this idea of denial. Now, I am really interested in this because it can take two paths, and the first one is one that we use a lot. It's not as bad as it looks. We see the image, and we look at it, and we are convinced that it's really not all that bad. Even though the scales tell us a different story, even though there are piles of clothes in the closet that no longer fit, we look in the mirror and we say, you know what? It's just not that bad. And just so you know, in the church, we like to do the same thing. We look at this and what do we usually like to do? We like to talk about past successes. We like to say, well, it used to be like this, or it used to be like that, or it used to be this way, or it used to work this way. And you realize what we're doing. We're focusing on the image of the past and not the image as it is in the today. You see, we focus on the physical, don't we? We get really caught up in how do I fix my problem? Well, we look at the physical things that are out there. And we want to do this or do that. Maybe we'll fix up the building and that'll help us think that we're doing something. Or maybe we'll add a this or a that to worship. Or maybe we'll just add a new program here or this or that there. And we try to look at the physical things and say, you know what? I don't think it's that bad. I just need a tweak. I just need a new paint job. I just need to put another coat or something on. Maybe I just need some polish. See, we're in denial about a problem that's out there. And the thing is, it may provide a spark, but eventually, without a lifestyle change, we go back to the same way that we wanted it before, don't we? I mean, when we're in denial and we think it's just not that bad, we're not willing to acknowledge that there are issues out there, then we might make a slight fix, but then in a little while, we just kind of go back the same way it is. Now, not only do we get the idea that it's not as bad as it looks, sometimes we get the idea that this is who I am. Just so you know, this is another critter's mentality, because it means we just accept it. How many times have we used this phrase in our own life? You know, especially when it comes to a weight situation, this is just who I am. You know, I have a slow metabolism. My life is kind of busy. I don't have a slow metabolism. You know, it's not my fault. This is just the way that God made me. I have everything going against me. It's all the way it is. And well, the problem is that in the church, when we get into this is just who we are, the church begins to hold fast to the idea of mediocrity. Now, what do I mean by mediocrity? It means as a church, we can get into the good enough approach. Have you ever used this in a ministry approach? It's good enough. It's good enough. Could you imagine that Jesus had taken this mentality? That it was just good enough? You see, the idea of good enough is if I just kind of package it up and it is what it is, and well, this is all that we can do, and it's not the best that I have, but it's the best that I'm willing to offer. And so we get into this mode that since it's who I am, what does it matter? Because it's not to the point where I want to just end it, but it does mean that we surrender to the image in the mirror. You see, this idea of denial is really, really difficult, because as I begin to deny that, you know what, there are things that I can do, there are changes I can make, there are lifestyle adaptations I can take in my life that will change everything, I don't want to do that. Instead, I just say, you know what, the image I see is who I've become. And I guess you just need to learn to live with it. And of course, you realize eventually denial becomes the fact that we can no longer accept the image, and you go backwards, and that's where you get to this disaster mode. Now, are we here? Maybe sometimes. But there's a third method. It's called the method of disgust. Now, I don't like the image in the mirror. That's where it starts. Now, this is a good thing. It's better than disaster, and it's better than denial, because I look at the mirror, and I guess what I realize? The image that I see in the mirror is not the image that I want it to be. So I look at the mirror, and I become disgusted with what I see. Problem is that's where it starts, but sometimes that's exactly where it ends. We declare, I'm going on a diet. New Year's resolution, 1 week away, you know what, in just a couple of days, that's my marker, right? I'm going to go on a diet. I'm going to change my image. We even go out and we do research on the latest and greatest diets out there. However, as we begin to read what's involved, we begin to, even before we take the first step, make the excuses. I can't eat like that. I don't have time to exercise. That's an unreasonable request. You're laughing because you know what? We've all done this, haven't we? We go out there and we research the diet and we realize that you know what? Our favorite food is an onion, and we decide that's not the diet for me. Well, actually, that isn't what we decide. We decide that, well, I know how to fix the problem. Many times we try to adapt the diet to our lifestyle. Then when it does not work, we declare the diet is bogus. It's the idea behind the baseball thing that I read you. The people that were playing baseball, every rule they ran up against that they didn't like, they had a solution. What was the solution? Change the rule. You don't like the ball? Fine, we'll stuff a sock. The bats are too expensive? Fine, we'll just break a branch. You know what? I don't want to run 90 feet. Fine, we'll just make the circle a little bit smaller. And this is kind of how we do in this disgust mode. We become disgusted with the image, and we look at the image, and we want it to all change, but it's not changing because, you know what? We declare the diet is bogus. And the ironic thing is then we get out in a group, and somebody brings up the particular diet plan that we said we tried, and what do we say? That doesn't work. Man, I tried that, and it doesn't work. And you know what the reality is? We didn't try it at all. So what is disgust look like in the church? That's a good question. We're unhappy. How many times have you met people that just say, I'm unhappy with where the church is going. I'm unhappy with the way things are working. Notice they're unhappy with the way things are going, but they're not so unhappy with the way things are going that they're ready to try to do something different to change the way things are going. Everything we seem to find something wrong with it. It's broken. We're frustrated. Every now and then we get fed up with the image and we try something new. Notice I said try. You know that's a word I hate. Try. No, try. I like Yoda's philosophy. Don't try, do. We try something new. Because you have to realize that your style, that thing that you're holding on to, is what created the image in the mirror that you are now disgusted with. You see, we get to the point that we get disgusted and we don't want to change anything, but we don't realize the reason that I have weight problems is because I eat 3 times a day at McDonald's with a Big Mac, French fries, and soda pop. Okay, that's not discriminating against McDonald's, okay? That's not a fight against McDonald's. It's just, you understand. You are what you put into your body, and that's what makes the image in the mirror. It's the same way in the church. It's, you are what you put into it. And so when we begin to put things into it and they're not making any difference, we become disgusted with it because we want the image to get better, but really don't want to pay the price for improving the image. I mean, I want to weigh 140 pounds, but do you know what it costs me to weigh 140 pounds? I mean, my goodness, I walk past the cookie store and gain 10. I don't even have to stop and eat one. I just have to sniff. I mean, it's not fair. But you do understand that if I am going to do this idea of changing the image that I see in the mirror, I can't take a disastrous approach and just love it. I can't take a disastrous approach and say, you know what? I'm just getting older. It's who I am. You can't take the disgusting approach and just complain all the time about the image. There's another approach that you're going to have to take. And well, now we're to where I want to preach. We have to take a disciplined approach. Now, I showed you that video clip at the beginning of the sermon. And just so you know, I am going to reiterate, I am not a runner. I've told you guys many times, if you see me running, you best start, because you know what it means? There is something chasing me, and it's very big and very dangerous. I am not a runner. God didn't build me to be a runner. God didn't design me to be a runner. I don't have any speed. I have short legs. I have a short waist. I am not a runner, but I can appreciate those that can run. As a matter of fact, think about that clip that you saw. He came off that starting line. That man got knocked over. Somebody bumped into him and knocked him out. How easy would it have been to be laying on that ground to start making excuses in life? I mean, after all, it wasn't his fault. Somebody bumped him over, right? I mean, it wasn't fair. He could have made all kind of excuses. He could have called the referee and cried foul. He could have said, you know what, that was illegal. He could have asked him to start the race over. But that's not what he did. What did he do? He got up and started running. He ran as hard as he could, as fast as he could. And his running style wasn't pretty. It was kind of unorthodox. And his arms were flailing and his head threw back, which, by the way, I'm told that is not the way you're supposed to run. I mean, you're supposed to have a tight stance and focus on where you're going. But he was just going to finish his race as strong as he could. And you know what? I think this is the mentality that Jesus intended for the church. And Paul intended for us to understand it, because in 1 Corinthians, I can't talk this morning, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 24 through 27, Paul switches from a dieting mentality. He gives us another analogy to think about. He tells the Corinthian church, which, by the way, was dealing with all of the same issues that the modern-day church deals with, I got the solution for you. And here it is. Do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like someone running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. I said all the things before because I wanted you to make aware that, you know what, if we're going to turn things around and make things different for our church, we're going to have to take a very disciplined approach. But just so you're perfectly clear, the other methods will not change it, and this is not an instant fix. The idea of discipline, if you decide you're going to go on a diet, you don't get to go on the diet the next day and step on the scale and step on the scale. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be awesome if it only took one day? That's not the way it works. If you're truly going to make a lifestyle change, this process takes months, years sometimes to turn it around. And you do understand if we're going to take a disciplined approach to how to go about rebuilding a church, this is the approach. And so we're going to break down this mentality of discipline. And you know what Paul starts with? An interesting idea. You have to know why you're running. I got a friend that I don't understand because they like to run marathons, but they have no chance of winning the marathon when they start. After all, they know they're not fast enough, but they like to run. And when you ask them why they run, they say, I just want to finish. Really? That's not me. I can appreciate what Paul is saying here. Why did Paul say we're running this race? We're running to win. Paul's not interested in second place. Paul's not interested in just getting there. He's not interested in crossing the finish line. He doesn't want a participation trophy. That's not what Paul is saying. Paul is saying, you know what? I am running this race, and my intention is to win the race. Now, here's the question. What's the prize? Many of us, when I ask you that question, we would think the prize is heaven. I hate to tell you this. Heaven's the finish line. That ain't the prize. You see, I am not running this race simply to get up to heaven. I am running this race to win the prize, and the prize is what Jesus called the prize, because what did Jesus come? Jesus didn't say, I came to take everybody to heaven. What did he say? I came to seek and save the lost. Therefore, my prize is running the race in such a way that I affect as many people as possible so that maybe I can win a few to run the race with me. You see, that's the prize. You have to understand, we are running the race not just to get to heaven. We are running the race because I am interested in winning the prize, and the prize of the crown of the last eternal age. What's the only thing in life that's eternal? When I get to heaven, my prize is to look out across the sea of people that are there, and I get maybe a glimpse of the lives that I've changed throughout the course of my life. That's the prize. The prize is when I stand in front of my Heavenly Father, he says, well done, my good and faithful servant, because look at your reward, and you look out across and see all of the people whose lives you know. That's the image that Paul wanted us to get. And by the way, just as a side note, how many runners have to run the race in order to win the prize? All of them. Everybody has to run. This is more like a relay race where I hand to one person, they take it, they have to hand the numbers. You know what the problem with a relay race is? I can be the fastest person out there, but if the person in front of me decides they don't want to run, you don't win the race. Because the idea is that everybody has to take participation in the race. We are not running to finish. We are running to win a prize. Now, this is important because if I'm going to run, competing requires training. Could you imagine one day that you wake up and you're like, you know what, I think I'm going to run. I mean, you've never ran before. It's never been a habit. But you decide, that day I'm going to leave the house and I think I'm going to run about 5 miles. I've driven 5 miles. It doesn't take that long, really. It doesn't seem that far. I mean, 5 miles isn't even from my house up to the food line store, surely. But if I tried to run 5 miles and I've never ran before, what's going to probably happen? Somebody's going to be calling 911. Because you're going to find me on the side of the road in this little position like, I can't go any further. Because that's what's going to happen, because you do understand. If I'm going to run, I have to train to run. I can't sit and then decide I'm going to run. I'm going to not make it very far in that mentality. And I like the way Paul puts this, because Paul doesn't just say we need to train. He says what? We need to do strict training. It needs to be strict training. Now, I understand what that means because, well, if I'm going to be an effective runner, then there's some things that have to change in my life. You know what that means I'm going to probably have to do? First and foremost, start running. It means I'm going to have to set time in my schedule and carve out places in my life to go out and run. And I have to take that time. It has to be something I do every single day, because the moment I stop training to run and I don't go run, I run just like my son. I don't run as well as I used to, because it requires us to be strict about what we're doing. Now, running is step one, but that's not all of it, is it? I mean, what else do I have to do if I'm going to be a runner? Well, my diet, right? What I consume. You have to cut out certain things and take with other things. You have to eat these kind of things just before the race, but don't eat these because they'll make you really sick when you try to run. I have to pay attention to what I'm going to put into my body if I am going to run the race. You understand that it's the same thing for the church. We have to be careful about what we put in because it's going to affect how we go about running. It may require that my schedule change. Things that I used to do, I can't do anymore because you know what? That time is now designed for training. It may even affect the way that I dress because you know what I have learned? Runners don't wear the same thing as normal people. I would never go out of my house when I wore a runner on because you know what? They're usually kind of tight, like spandex. I wouldn't look. It's not a good look for me, seriously. But you do understand that if I'm going to run the race to win the race, I'm going to have to dress for me. I'm going to have to put on the clothes that makes me winner. Isn't this kind of what Paul tells us? If we're going to run our race, we have to take off the old and put on the new image of Christ. If I'm going to encourage people to follow Christ, then when they see me, they've got to be able to see Christ, right? It makes really good sense. It's so simple. How can we not figure this out? Why do we have to have piles and piles and piles of self-help books to figure out? The way you run the race is you train to run the race. And you know what? You have to have a direction. Now, this is important. Because if they fire the gun and everybody else is running that way, and you decide to run that way, you might be the fastest person out there, but do you win? No. This is important. You understand, there's a course that's laid out. There's a place that's been mapped. You're not running from something. You're running to something. Do you know the difference? If I'm running from something, then my goal is to get away from that something. So that means I can run any direction I want as long as the something that I'm running from isn't catching me, right? It's all legal. There are no boundaries as long as I don't get caught. But if I'm running to something, then I have to take the shortest distance. I have to have some direction in what I'm doing. I have to have some discipline in the steps of my life. See, this is all very important because it's a church. We have to understand we have a direction. The direction isn't here, the direction is not there. How do I know? Matthew chapter 28. Jesus' statement, I've come to seek and save the lost. The other thing that you have to do is you have to work within the rules. I'm thinking about maybe making that baseball thing really large print and putting it up sometimes here because you understand, just like a diet, you have to work within the rules of the diet. Just like baseball, you have to work within the rules of baseball. There are no shortcuts. There are no quick fixes. Paul goes on to say he doesn't want to be disqualified. I love that statement. Paul says, I am going to run in the way that they say I'm supposed to run. I'm going to wear the right shoes. I'm going to wear the right pants. I'm going to wear the right body. I'm going to have the right food in me. I'm not going to put any drugs in me. I'm going to do all the things there because at the end, when I win the race, I don't want to just cross and have them hand me the prize and then I get disqualified. I'm going to run according to the rules. Now, what does this mean for us? Well, there are some things that are core to our faith. Things like prayer. Things like study. Things like inviting others. You know, the funny thing is, these are all the basics of the church. They've been doing the same thing all the way back 2,000 years ago. It's the same thing that happened today. Don't believe me? Go back and read Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 44. It's the same formula. They haven't switched anything. The problem is that the way that we implement the things, sometimes those things begin to take a lesser role. Because you know what? Those are the hard things. So as we're heading into 2019, I would love to tell you this is going to be one of those years where we're going to add these great big programs, or we're going to do this, or we're going to do that. You do understand. The elders have met. We've talked about this over and over and over again. Folks, we're going to get a lot more simple. And it's going to begin with this core idea that we're going to go back to an idea of prayer. Now, understand, we're going to teach some lessons on what it really means to have a prayer ministry in the church. But you do get it. We're here to run the race. We're here to reach people. And if we're going to do that, then we've got to figure out, are we tired of the image?
If you look at the image of the partner, when you look at the image of yourself as a Christian, are you tired of the image?